If you watch movies, you already know this, but sequels and remakes are everywhere. They dominate the box office and our television screens. And while there's the joke that Hollywood has simply run out of ideas, Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic, says the lack of innovation is a bigger trend than we realize. In an installment of his new newsletter, he argues that the U.S. has fallen away from generating big new ideas. And Derek joins us now to tell us more about why we should be concerned. Welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Yes. So movies are one thing, Derek, but you're suggesting that this is a symptom of something bigger. Where else in society are we seeing idea stagnation?
The answer, unfortunately, is just about everywhere that we look, but I'll give you some very specific examples. We see this in science and technology. There are now several studies that have come to the conclusion that research and development productivity is slowing down, that scientific knowledge has been in secular decline, and that as the number of scientific researchers grows, they are clustering around the same small number of ideas, essentially doing more incremental science, in many ways following the very example set by Hollywood. That rather than break new ground, create new franchises, they are clustering around franchises already created. We see this in entrepreneurship. Business formation in the U.S. has been declining since the 1970s, and one of the most important sources of entrepreneurship, that is new ideas in business, is immigration, but we're in a deep immigration depression right now. We see it in institutions, too. We haven't invented a new physical, elite physical university in many, many decades. At the government level, many of the agencies that we use to respond to problems are 50, 60, 70 years old, but we're dealing with novel problems, like, for example, a novel coronavirus. So I think that we are seeing fewer new ideas in science, in business, in immigration policy, and in American institutions as well.
Okay, I love in your article how you have the reader imagine going to sleep in 1996 and then waking up in 2020. Your argument is that society hasn't really changed that much in relation to, say, going to sleep in 1875 and waking up in 1900. But to this argument, what about advances like the COVID-19 vaccine, as you mentioned, the internet, our phones, electric cars? I mean, is it building on innovations of the past in a way that deepens them?
This is a great point, and one that I try to get at very directly in the piece. I say, what about all the cool new stuff? You know, what about mRNA technology, which is fantastic? What about breakthroughs in AI or solar energy? I think those are wonderful. They're sensational accomplishments, but they are punctuating. They are exceptions punctuating a long era of broad technological stagnation. We see in the macroeconomic data that productivity growth has declined since the 1970s. We see in the economic data that average income growth has declined since the 1970s. And there's all sorts of studies that whose detail I won't go into that has found that scientific and technological productivity has declined immensely. And you compare this sort of 25-year history of 1996-2001 with the 25-year history after 1875, where we invented skyscrapers, we invented cars, we invented Coca-Cola and basketball and football and aspirin. There was just so much more physical world innovation back then. And right now, our innovation is, for better or worse, funneled often into communications technology and software.
You give three reasons why this stagnation and new ideas may be happening. Can you briefly break them down for us?
Sure. One, I think the whole world is becoming one marketplace of attention. What you see in Hollywood is that as Hollywood has gotten better at figuring out what audiences want, they've realized audiences just want familiarity, and so it's sequels, adaptations, and reboots all the way down. We're seeing that happen in science, too. Science is also a marketplace of attention, and you're seeing more scientists publish papers that they think other scientists are likely to cite. This is a very similar attention dynamic where transparent marketplaces of attention yield familiarity and incrementalism. Number two is the creep of what I call gerontocracy. That's basically a fancy word for old people taking over everything. Joe Biden is the oldest president in U.S. history. Donald Trump would have been. Average ages of Nobel Prize laureates and CEOs are rising. And then finally, the rise of vetocracy. That's a term that basically means we've set up rules, institutions that make it really hard to build new things at the government level, build new infrastructure, mega projects. We've gotten really, really good at saying no to big new ideas.
I have less than a minute with you, but why is this important? I mean, is it about maintaining the U.S.'s role as a superpower?
It is about maintaining the U.S.'s role as a superpower, but it's also about maintaining the growth of human welfare. We need better advancements in pharmaceutical drugs, but it's the average amount of time taken to produce a new pharmaceutical drug has tripled in the last three decades. I want people to live longer. I want them to be happier. I want them to have cooler stuff. I want life to improve. And the way that life improves is that we experiment, we innovate, we create new products that improve human welfare, and then we apply ethics to determine how to advance those technologies. I'm worried that essentially we are seeing fewer births of new ideas, and that's going to be bad for Americans in the long run.
Part two of this conversation is how we fix this. We will get there. Derek Thompson is a senior writer at The Atlantic and creator of the new newsletter, Work in Progress. As always, thank you so much.
Thank you.